It's great to be back. Thank you for having me. So the title of my talk today is Accidental Weeds or Chosen Seeds. And I'm inviting us into an exploration of the question, what's growing in the garden of your life? What's growing in the garden of your mind? How are you tending the garden of your mind? Now, I'm a big-time gardener. I have a very large yard. I spend a lot of time in my garden pulling weeds and tending to things, and I get a lot of life lessons out of my garden. I like to visualize the mind as a fertile field of rich soil, and the thoughts that we think are the seeds that get planted there. And when those thoughts get nurtured and they're allowed to grow and flourish, they become our beliefs and our attitudes that are deeply held. And those things affect our behavior, they affect the way we see the world, and our actual life experiences. We have been created with the ability to do two very important things with our minds: weed it and feed it. And both are really important. And today we're going to talk about the continual process of weeding and feeding our minds as one of our primary tools that we have for changing our lives. So weeding in this context is becoming aware of and identifying and eradicating problematic thoughts or weeds in our minds. And feeding is supplying the mind with good, nourishing food that helps us to counter those weeds and reprogram it at a very deep level. The thoughts and beliefs and attitudes that we have in our minds come from a lot of sources. The thoughts that we get exposed to, especially in childhood, take root deeply in us, and when we're repeatedly exposed to something and we habitually think it, it really changes everything about how we see and interact and interpret our worlds. Thoughts have real creative power. And so what goes on in there is very, very important. And as our spiritual master Yoda said, we can unlearn what we've learned. And what he actually said was, we must unlearn what we've learned. I woke up thinking about this the other day. You know, wouldn't it be a great thing if these things called our minds came with a user's manual, like a comprehensive user's guide? I mean, most complex things you buy these days come with one of those, tells you how it works, how to do things with it. I personally would be most interested in that little section at the back, which is the troubleshooting guide. Like, go right there, you know, if you're having this problem, do this, this, and this to try to fix it. That would be a really neat thing. Oh, that it were so simple. But the truth is, working with our minds actually is pretty simple in concept, not quite so easy in practice. And the first obstacle that most of us have is that we're actually pretty unaware of what goes on in here a lot of the time. It's like we're on autopilot, and we're just cruising along. And, you know, that's fine if you're on target and on course, but we just have that plane overshot the airport by like an hour and a half or whatever, you know. It's not so good if we're not really heading where we want to be heading. I was here 3 weeks ago when Barry was talking about the fact that every 7 years, our bodies are completely made new. Every single cell in our bodies is replaced in 7 years, which I just think is amazing to think about. Now, again, if we're on autopilot, each cell is just passing off its blueprint to its replacement cell, and it's like passing the baton in a relay race. Things just stay the same. The plan is carried forward into the future. And the great news is that we can change that blueprint that's being handed off at any point in time. Any moment we choose, we can change the blueprint. And just as if you're constructing a building, if you change the blueprint, what gets built has to change. Weeding and feeding the mind, I believe, is one of the most powerful ways that we have at our disposal to actually change that blueprint that's being passed on. So no matter how this stuff got here, that's going on up here, the really exciting news is that you are the only thinker in your mind. No one thinks in your mind but you. You have ultimate dominion and control and power there. It's your turf. So let's get back to that user's manual for a minute. We don't have one comprehensive user's manual that tells us how to work with our minds, but we've got a lot of really great resources that we can draw from. So William James, who's the father of modern psychology, said this: "The greatest discovery of my generation is that a human being can alter his life by altering the attitudes of his mind." And I think that's not the greatest discovery of his generation, but of all times. It's an old idea that's absolutely true. There's a lot of really great writers that write about this, and one of my favorites is Louise Hay. She's written a lot of great books, but one of them is You Can Heal Your Life. It's one of my favorites. And Louise says, we have learned that for every effect in our lives, there's a thought pattern that precedes and maintains it. Our consistent thinking patterns create our experiences. Therefore, by changing our thinking patterns, we can change our experiences. And in Christianity, there's a lot of teachings all throughout the Bible about what we can do with this thing called our minds and what is actually our spiritual responsibility to do with this thing. And one of my favorite scriptures is Ephesians 4, 22 through 24, where we're encouraged to cast off our old nature, lay it down, and step into a completely new regenerated nature. We're told that's possible, and we're told that the way that we do it is by renewing and being made new in the attitudes of our mind. It all starts right here. So it's totally possible, but we have our part to play, and it involves what I'm calling weeding and feeding. So what is this weeding and feeding? How do we do this? Well, if we think of this plot of soil, we have this beautiful plot of rich soil, we plowed it up and it's all ready, what happens if we just walk away and leave it there, unattended? And all sorts of stuff starts to appear that we didn't necessarily intend to have there. Weeds just appear. They can quickly fill that space, take over, and actually suck up the resources from the soil, the water, everything that would choke out anything that we might want to have grow there. Now, sometimes some beautiful seeds will just happen to blow in and land there and grow. That happens from time to time in my garden. I'm astounded by some little things that show up. But I've got parents, grandparents who were farmers. They raised cherries and blackberries and a bunch of other crops. And I was thinking about what would have happened if they would have just plowed up their fields and just said, okay, let's see what shows up. What's going to happen? You know, we would have starved. I probably wouldn't be here. That wouldn't be a good way to run a farm. We have to do something active and proactive to choose and plant and tend the seeds in our minds and in our lives that we want to have grow there. So I'm going to talk about feeding first, feeding the mind. And I have a background in software design and computers. So we have a saying in computers, garbage in, garbage out. You can't put junk into the computer and expect that you're going to get good data out that gives you good, valid information. And I think so many times we take our minds, our brains, our minds for granted. We work on our bodies. And if we were wanting peak performance out of our bodies, we would exercise, we'd pay attention to what we're eating, we would put it through the paces to get peak results in performance. Well, our mind is really no different. It's really important that we pay attention to what goes on in there if we want peak performance and peak results in our lives. What goes in and what we let roll around in there, what we give our attention to and our focus to, grows and expands. And I had a really early experience when I've been studying all this stuff for about 25 years, and especially the power of the mind and working with your thinking. And about 5 years into it, so about 20 years ago, I was working in software, and I was working in an office. And one of the gals, she's a very tiny, teeniest, petitest woman, she got pregnant with her first child. Very exciting time. She was just a little tiny woman. And I was in her office one day for a meeting, and when I got up to leave her office, I went to open the door that she sat at her desk and looked at every day. And on this door that she stared at every day was a poster of an enormous, and I mean enormous, baby. Like the biggest baby I've ever seen. And it wasn't exactly a good picture. It was like kind of a scary picture, like just this giant, giant baby. And I remember just looking at it going, man, if I was pregnant, I don't know if I'd be staring at that every single day. I mean, she's a little tiny woman, and this is like a giant baby. And sure enough, you know, the time came, and she had her baby, and she had a giant, giant baby. I mean, nobody could believe that this little tiny woman had produced this giant baby. It was really incredible. And that was very powerful. I was only about 5 years into this stuff, and I'm like, what we look at, think about, focus on, she grew a baby. That's what a baby was supposed to be. A more recent example, I love movies, and I would like to recommend this movie to you if you haven't seen it. It's called Gifted Hands, and it's the Ben Carson story. Ben Carson is an African-American man who is one of the world's most renowned neurosurgeons. He's a brain surgeon. He grew up in the inner cities, Chicago and Boston. His mom was, she had a third grade education. She couldn't read. She hid that from her kids. He had one brother. It was a really tough life that they had. She had emotional problems, depression. She had all these mental breakdowns and would go into mental hospitals. They would stay with relatives, he and his brother. His life started out with every possible conceivable disadvantage. And he says himself, by the age of 10, he was a kid in serious trouble. Getting violent, big temper, and just on a path to destruction. Well, his mom, bless her heart, because she had a rough road, she would always speak these basically affirmations to her son. And she would grab him and touch his head and she'd say, "You've got the whole world in there. You just have to see beyond what you can see." And her other one that she would always say to him is, she would say, it went out of my head, it'll come back. The brain is busy. She just spoke truth to her sons. And this, the funniest one that she did was she cleaned house for this professor who was this very learned man. She had a lot of respect for him. And she was in his library one day, filled with books, dusting. And she's looking around, and she notices there is a TV in this library, but it's buried behind piles of books. You couldn't watch it without moving giant piles of books. And she asked the professor, "Sir, have you read all these books in this library?" And he said, "Yeah, most of them, yes." And boy, you could just see the light bulb went on in her mind. And she went home that night, and her boys were parked in front of the TV. Ben describes, you know, they'd play outside till it was dark, then they'd watch TV till it was time to go to bed. She flipped off that TV. "What are you doing, Mom? What?" And she said, "From now on, here's the deal. 2 pre-selected TV programs a week, and you're going to go to the library and get 2 books every week, and you're going to give me a written report at the end of the week on both of those books." Well, you can imagine that probably it did create a riot. These little boys were just like, "You're the meanest mom in the world. What's wrong with you? Nobody else does this." But she stuck to her guns, and he describes, he says, "You know, I really didn't like that when I first started going to the library. But then once I got going, I just really got interested in things." So by the time he was in 5th grade, he says, in a year and a half, he went from failing, being the lowest kid in the class, to being the top performer at school. In a year and a half. And now he's gone on to become this amazing neurosurgeon. His brother went on to become an engineer. And he did the first successful separation of Siamese twins that were joined at the head in 1987. Nobody'd ever done it where both twins had survived. And he's done it many times now since then. And he's pioneered a lot of techniques in brain surgery for kids especially. He became head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins at 32. So just think of that, the trajectory that kid was on, living where he lived with the experiences that he had. And the only thing that changed for him, as opposed to other kids in the same circumstance, was what went in here and the statements that his mom kept saying to him over and over, even when everything around him looked completely opposite of what she was saying. It's an amazing story. It's a really, really good story. So it's really worth thinking about what we focus on and put in our minds is critically important. So we can ask ourselves, do we want a really big baby and a difficult delivery and a lot of pain? Or do we want to, like Ben Carson did, just blow by all of our possible dreams of success and fulfillment and really give our gift to this world, what we're here to do? We get to choose the posters we put on our walls. We get to choose that. And we get to choose what we do with our minds. So that's feeding the mind from my perspective in kind of a general sense. Then there's feeding the mind about really specific things that are going on in our life. And this is where, for me, the idea of doing positive self-talk or affirmations comes into play. When I started learning about this 25 years ago, I had a wonderful counselor and spiritual teacher, and he described it to me this way. If there's a team that shows up to play a football game on a field, and nobody shows up to play against them, what happens? That team wins by default. Nobody shows up.
So they get the win. It's the same with our thoughts. If we have continual thought processes going on in there, and nothing shows up to counter that or challenge that, those thoughts in our minds rule the day. They win. They choose what we're going to be having in our life. Now, the time that we want to be weaving a parachute for ourselves is not when we're about to leap out of the airplane. That's a really bad idea. We want to be weaving our parachute all along and getting ready for the moment that we need it. So working with our thoughts is how we do that, to bring a condition, a team, to come on the field to challenge what's going on in there that might not be so useful. I have been working with positive self-talk and affirmations for 25 years, more than. I have filled a pile of notebooks higher than myself writing them. And I'll tell you, it's been one of the absolute cornerstones of my own personal and spiritual growth processes and paths. I don't even have the words. I don't even know who I would be. I really don't know what I would look like or who I would be if I hadn't been doing this all these years. So I overcame a serious eating disorder and very severe anxiety. I've struggled my whole life with depression and mood instability. Health challenges, relation challenges, financial challenges. And it's not that affirmations are the only thing I did, but working with my mind to change my perspectives about things was critically important. And I really can't even have a negative thought, pretty much of any kind, especially about body image or anything like that, without five team members showing up on the field to say, boom, boom, boom. It's pretty cool. But that took a lot of conditioning to get there. So just in case there's any doubt, I'm a real believer in that process of working with these statements. So an easy formula for an affirmation is to tell ourselves the opposite of the negative thing or the fearful thing that we're telling ourselves. So Ben Carson's mom, when he's looking around his world saying, you know, I got to get a knife so I can protect myself and fight in the streets, she's saying, you've got the whole world right here. You're destined for something. So speaking the opposite of what actually is taking hold in there. So I'm going to give you just a few examples. We're not going to go into a lot of detail about forming these statements, but right now I'm going to just give you a couple of examples. So if I'm confused about some problem in my life and I'm feeling overwhelmed and I don't know what to do, and I'm noticing that I'm thinking that a lot, I would have a couple of different ways I would come at it. I like to personally affirm an end result. I like to say something about what I want to see, and I like to affirm something about the process of getting there. So it's not just that I'm already there, that's important, but how, you know, not how necessarily, but the fact that I am getting there. So if I'm confused, I might have, I gain clarity and guidance with each passing moment, and I am clear and focused. So affirming the process and affirming the end result. If I'm sick or have some sort of health challenge, and I'm feeling like this is never going to go away, I'm never going to get any better, then I would say, I'm getting better and better every day. And I am healed, healthy, and whole. Process and final result. Money stuff, being in debt. I'm feeling like I'm never going to pay all these bills. I have more than enough money to meet all my desires and all my needs. And, process, I'm intuitively guided to the perfect course of action to become debt-free. I'm not saying how it's going to happen. I'm just saying I believe it's happening. So the more carefully constructed affirmations are, the more powerful I think they are. And you can get at it from the physical level, mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional. All those levels are important. We're not going to go into that deeply, but I'll give you some resources for working that way later on. Now let's talk about weeding. Because actually, weeding actually takes more energy than planting the good seeds. It takes persistent energy. I don't just go out there and pull my weeds in my garden one time. I'm weeding continuously, going around and coming around again. I finish the cycle and I have my little course that I do. And I think this is where a lot of people really get off track with affirmations personally. They jump to the affirming and jump to the declarations of a new reality without actually taking a look at what is going on and understanding it a little bit and getting a little bit more information there. There's a lot of belief around, you know, don't give any attention to the problem because then you're giving it energy. And we certainly, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to interrupt the ways that we've been working with it in the past and letting it roll around, for sure. But we do have to actually see what it is to be able to address it. So weed identification is really important. And trying to grow anything in a big bed of weeds is harder than growing it in a nicely, freshly plowed, clean field. So weeding is very important. And understanding the weeds is important. So we can think of it this way. If you've got something stinking in your refrigerator, something's rotting in there, you know, one way to deal with it is you can just keep buying boxes of baking soda, put them in there, absorb some of the smell. It might help a little bit, but there's still something rotting back there. And until that gets out, the smell's going to be there. And even if that turns to dust and stops stinking, if you've got that habit, something else is going to be back there stinking. So we've got to root out and find this stinky thinking, right? Otherwise, there won't be a permanent solution to anything. So we've been given a lot of ideas about weeding the mind from a lot of different sources. So in the Eastern traditions of Buddhism and Hinduism, meditation is weeding. Anything that quiets and calms this mind and shuts off the just thought trains that get going in there that's really out of control, anything that we can do to learn how to quiet our thoughts and just let them settle so that we can more proactively direct our minds. Weeding. I said I like movies, so I have another one for you. For Love of the Game with Kevin Costner. Not a true story, but it's the story of Billy Chappell, big-time major league pitcher. And I love this. He's like this very successful pitcher, and every time he goes to the pitcher's mound, he steps to the mound and he has a little ritual. And inside his head he says, "Clear the mechanism." And the roar of the crowd and all the waving of the signs, everything just blurs out and gets silent. And the way they depict it in the movie is really cool. It's like his whole world just becomes like him and the catcher and the batter. That's it. And he's there to do what he's there to do. So clearing the mechanism, weeding. Weeding. Not giving the weeds the airtime in the radio station of our minds. That's another way I like to think of it. Just quieting it down in there. And again, I said, you know, most of us are just not really aware of what's going on in there a lot of the time. And that's the first step, is cultivating some awareness, just observing ourselves, especially when we're worrying or we're scared or we're frustrated, irritated, any kind of agitation, then we just want to say, you know, what's happening in there? And actually pay attention to the thoughts, because a lot of us just, it's shocking sometimes what actually is going on in there. And we can use that information when we start to pay attention and we learn what's going on in there. We can use that information to create the chosen seeds, the antidote thoughts, the affirmations or positive self-talk that we choose to cultivate to put on the field to help us in those moments when we need them. And that's what I call real-time weeding and feeding. Real-time weeding and feeding. You catch yourself in some kind of thought, you know, oh, I don't look so good today. And then I always still love the cancel, clear, clear thing that's been around forever. I still do it. I do it every day. So it's like I'll catch myself thinking something like that. And I'm just like, yeah, no, I'm not going to treat myself that way. I mean, that's a good way to look at it. Cancel, clear, clear. Then you put your team on the field and you bring in a different thought. Real-time weed and feed. So as I said, weeds are persistent little suckers. They don't just go away. The nature of weeds is to just keep coming and keep coming back, some of them. So the key is it's a continual process. We don't weed our gardens one time. We don't just take one shower and call it good. That would be a bad thing. I don't think people would appreciate that very much. There are certain things that are just required to be done over and over again. So here's another way that I like to think about it. If we have a big pile of dirt in front of us, and we're pouring water on the top of this pile of dirt, the water starts to run down the sides of the pile of dirt, and grooves begin to form. And then the water goes into the grooves, and the grooves get deeper. And soon the water's just going through those grooves. It's not going anywhere else, and the grooves get deeper. So it's the same in our thinking. Our thoughts go through grooves, and they make those grooves deeper. And if we want to think a different way or change what's going on in there, just like with the dirt pile, we have to fill in the old grooves that we no longer want to use, and we have to carve new grooves. Then the water can flow a different way. We have to do that in our minds as well. And weeding and feeding, Weeding is filling in the old grooves, and digging the new grooves is feeding. So I'm going to talk a little bit about resources. I mentioned Louise Hay. She's a good one for affirmations about health and positive self-talk for health. Anything from Unity, Science of Mind, they've got a lot of really good resources. One of my favorite of all time for fear is Susan Jeffers. She wrote a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And there was a point in my software career where I was having so much anxiety that I literally had a sheet of affirmations from her book that I had to pull out every hour on the hour and read them to keep from running screaming from the building. So I really love her work. And over the last 25 years, I've done a lot of counseling and coaching work and also done, obviously, tons of my own work. So my clients were always asking me, will you write me affirmations for this? Will you write me affirmations for that? And I was just spending all this time writing affirmations for people, and I suddenly thought, you know, I'm writing the same things. Because a lot of the stuff that goes on beneath these problems at the surface are very similar. So I came up with my own product line of, like, sets of affirmations about life challenges and problems. And I also have a talk that goes into a lot more detail that I've got on CD about properly forming and constructing self-talk programs for yourself. And a lot of things I think that get missed in the common knowledge that make it so that they don't work as well. So I think I've got a few secrets back there. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit strange. It's like an expose or something. I feel a little exposed because the soundtrack of my life is back there on that table. You'll know a lot more about me by looking at some of those titles of, you know, everything that I've struggled with and some that I continue to work on. And there's like 19 different programs I've created, but I've got 50 more that I'm working on. So that should tell you something about me there. It's like the soundtrack of my life. I want to give you a really simple, not easy, but simple weed and feed exercise that you can take away today that will guarantee make a change in your life. Groove some new grooves in that dirt pile. Just start to notice how often you say, I have to, I need to, and I've got to. I just started doing this the other day, I don't even know where it came from, but I was really astounded by how often I was using those words. And anytime you notice that you're using have to, need to, I've got to, replace it with I want to, I choose to, or I get to. And one of the ways this came to me was years ago, when the Soviet Union was still the Soviet Union, a woman moved from Russia, and we were friends, and she just could not believe our grocery stores. She was just astonished by these giant places where we got to shop for food, and there's 15 varieties of everything, and having traveled a lot around the world and seeing grocery stores that would fit, you know, in this corner, and that's like the supermarket, you know, when I say, oh, I need to, you know, go by the market and pick something up, it's like, you know, I get to go to this amazing place where there's like everything I could ever want, and I actually have enough money to buy some things. Just those little shifts, it's amazing what you start to appreciate and how you start to retool from sort of like this, the average trudge to like this, wow, you know, I have all this at my disposal. This is amazing. So have to, need to, I've got to, get to, want to, choose to. It's a great practice, and I guarantee that will groove some new grooves in that dirt pile that will affect a lot more than just that. So it's time to make a commitment to weeding and feeding your mind every day and groove those new grooves in that dirt pile, and I guarantee you'll see some big transformation in your life. So that's the way it really is, my friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Nola.
Thank you, David.